Hi, everybody. This is my one-year anniversary in Baltimore, so I'm still fairly new. Thank you. You're not going to like the second part. I'm from New York. I know that. Not all of you. Oh, thank you. And I'm one of those that miss New York very much, but I am grateful for being here. When I was in New York, I now direct reality TV shows, but before that, I was a camera guy. And I worked on many things, reality shows, commercials, scripted stuff, also journalism. And this story is about one of those jobs. So in 2013, I got a call from a journalism company. I'm not going to name them because I signed a lot of contracts, but they're very sensational and they do a lot of illicit stuff. So you can kind of guess who they are. But I got a call, and they said they wanted to go to Iran, which is the place that I was born. So I was super excited because it's the culture that I grew up in. And to be able to bring that to America in this like form of cinematography that I love, it was super special to me. So I was stoked. And they called me in for a meeting, and it was kind of weird. They kind of wanted to like see how illegal I was willing to get. But they were being really subtle about it, so I was being kind of hesitant. And then it kind of ended with like, "So you good?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. Like, what did we do?" And so they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna call you. We're hoping to shoot in March. We'll let you know." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And March came around. I hadn't heard from them. So to cheer myself up, I went on this snowboarding trip to Colorado. And as I'm boarding the plane to come back, I got a call, and it was them. And I was like, "This is kind of last minute." And they said, "Hey, we tried to do it without you, and no one will talk to us because we're a bunch of white people. And so can you go?" And I was like, "When?" And they were like, "Here's the plan." And so they wanted me to leave immediately. And the deal was that they've got permits a while ago, and they claimed that they were a company out of Canada. And because Iran doesn't like America, for those of you who doesn't know. And they said they were doing a piece on like Persian food and culture, which is cute. Because what they were really doing was a story about the drugs. And the backstory on that is that in 2001, you guys remember 9/11? Yeah, you're not supposed to forget. So 9/11 caused the war on terror, which means USA went into Afghanistan and pushed the Taliban out of power. So to make money, the Taliban needed work. And so they did what a lot of broke people do, and they started to sell drugs. And so what they would do is they would harvest opium plants and then have mud hut villagers smuggle them into Iran. And then from Iran, they would go to Turkey, from Turkey, all over the place. And it's actually part of the reason we have this huge epidemic here in the States with opium and opiates in general is because of that war and because of what the Taliban has chosen to do. So this is a heavy topic, one that they would not allow the U.S. or Canada to come talk about because Iran doesn't like to talk about anything that is self-deprecating in any way, right? Now, their permits, they already got. So my name would not be on them if I went. And the problem with that is that Iran also does not recognize my American citizenship, which means that I have the same human rights that an Iranian citizen does, which is an adorable term in Iran. So this happens a lot, and like a journalist from the Western countries will come visit to do a job, and they'll get arrested, and they face 3 months of torture. And most of the times, they die, because 3 months turns into 6 and 9 and whatever else, right? So I knew all of that, and he explained what the story was about. And so I took my seat on the plane, and I said, "I need to know what camera you want to use, and I just need like 24 hours to go get my visa stamped." And I landed in New York, and I called my girlfriend at the time, who we had just moved in together, and she screamed really loudly, and then she also didn't try to convince me of otherwise because she kind of knew how much I wanted to do something like this. And so I went down to D.C., I got my visa stamped, I came up, I had like a quick dinner with her, and then I got on the plane. And I landed in Iran, and I was stoked. It was the place that I've only visited once since I was born there as an adult, and so I got to see it again, and now I know that I'm going to like do journalism. Like, this is insane. And I get to the hotel, and I get to meet the crew, and it's this British dude who's a producer, and there's a Uzbekistani guy who I actually had met before. He lives in Queens. His name's Roy. He's not like super Uzbekistani. So I meet these guys, and they're like, "Yeah, no one will talk to us. We don't speak the language, blah, blah, blah." So they hand me the camera, and They gave me a driver, and it was just like, you're on your own, like one-man band, you're a journalist for the next week. And I was like, this is the dream. This is way better than Real Housewives of New York, whatever the hell else I've been working on. So I take the driver's number, I call him up in the morning, and I started at this rehab facility, and I met this kid. He was 17 years old. He was addicted because he smuggled drugs and got hooked, and he was a mud hut villager in Afghanistan, and it was the story, right? And he introduced me to all these other people and the rehab clinic, and I saw what like is their version of a sober house, and I got to learn how the culture views drug abuse and drug addicts, and it was all just like fascinating, and it was everything I wanted. And then he told me about this place, and this place was kind of like it was like Woodstock without the good stuff. It was like 200 heroin addicts of different forms, crack, heroin itself. I don't really know the other ones. I can't really afford heroin, so I apologize. But it's basically the way he described it sounded like Hamsterdam. If any of the Baltimoreans remember The Wire, and they described this, it's like illegal to do drugs in these two city blocks, basically. And it's all behind an abandoned strip mall, and then behind them is this cliffside with this view of Tehran. So this is like insanely perfect cinematography, right? Like it's the story, it's the backdrop, it's gorgeous. And I tell the go back and tell the producer about this, and he's like, okay. We got to call the higher-ups back in New York. They might want to send one of the on-camera personalities for this. Like, this is a big deal. I feel like you scored here. So they send someone out. He's the owner of this company that I don't name. He's worth. I say that to say that he's worth, like, $1 billion at the time. He had just sold the company. He's very rich. And he's going to be the on-camera person. It's, like, a real big deal. And we get to this place, and it is exactly the way that he described. It is just absolute mayhem, and these addicts have, like, dug holes in the ground so that the wind from the cliffside does not blow out their lighters, and it's this, like, major ecosystem where some of the people are dealers but also addicts, and they're, you know, maintaining this community by injecting the drugs into the system, and it's just, it's wild. And I keep saying beautiful, but it's just kind of beautiful in an artistic sense. It's not actually, it's very depressing. I'm not condoning heroin use, for the record. So this is intense, and it's the dream. And the producer decides we should have a really small footprint, so he just grabs me and a translator for himself and the on-camera guy. And we walk out, and the on-camera the guy, he was just kind of like overwhelmed. I should also say that he decided to wear local garb, or what he thought was local garb. Iranians just wear like what we wear. It's not like – and so he looked pretty weird. But he's rich, so he kind of – I don't know what the rules are. Never been rich. So we're walking around, and he was just like, look, if I think of something, I'm going to just speak to you. But if I don't have anything, just shoot B-roll of all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I shoot this, and then I shoot him, and then I shoot this, and I shoot him. And we're going back and forth. And we had paid this local guy to one of the addicts, a local guy. He was just trying to help people talk on camera. He was going to try and convince them that we're cool and it's not a big deal. We gave him, like, $20, and he was stoked. So he's following us around. And then eventually we start talking to this one guy, and we're interviewing him. And the local guy knew that I spoke Farsi, and so he tapped me on the shoulder, and he was like, yo, we should go. And I was like, oh, no, this is great. Like, what do you mean? And I turn around to see what he was talking about, and all 200 of these addicts were stampeding around this cliffside and running away from something with some deep fear. And I look up the hill, and there's these three cops, and he was like, these guys raid the place, like, once every week, and if you stay here, you're going to get arrested. And so this is that moment where I'm like, oh, no, I didn't realize. Like, I was a little bit naive, and I was just, like, so stoked about this thing. And so I was like, oh, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. We have permits and stuff. And he was like, all right, deuces. And he bounced real quick. And I tapped the producer, and I was like, hey, there's this thing. Like, in New York, like, it's not – you just tell them, oh, it was a student film. We didn't know, whatever. And I think I was, like, going into it with that naive mentality. And the guys jumped out of the car, the cops, and they came running over, and they started screaming at us, just grabbed me by the arm. And I was pretending not to speak a lot of Farsi. I was kind of hoping that they would, like, say something in front of me that would be useful to me. I don't know why. But I'm glad I did. The translator jumped out of the van when he saw what was happening. He jumped over, and he came over, and he's like, oh, you got to take me, too. You got to take me, too. He doesn't speak Farsi. And they kind of knew that I was lying, and they got into an argument, and eventually they grabbed the producer too, and they were like, well, the producer, he doesn't speak Farsi, so you got to take me. So finally they take the three of us, the translator, myself, and the producer, and they left the rich guy because of his clothing. They thought he was one of the crackheads. That's my favorite part of this story. So we're in the cop car, and And it still hasn't really hit me, like, the weight of this and the fact that I am going to get tortured. And so it hit me when the producer grabbed the memory cards out of the two cameras and he handed them off to the rich guy in, like, a weird handshake. And he was like, hey, you know, just we'll call you when we get to the station and figure out what's going on or whatever. And it just kind of, like, happened right in front of my face. And I just kind of watched the memory card. And I just realized, like, the gravitas of what the fuck is about to happen. And so so I started shaking, I remember. And then the next thing I remember, we're in the station. And we're there for hours and hours. And there was this younger guy guarding us. And I started making friends with him. And he caught on to the fact that I spoke more Farsi than I was letting on. And so I befriended him a little more. And he was like, yeah, look, like, I'm just here serving my military service. I don't support the government or anything, so, like, I think you're cool, just so you know, just, like, just you guys have permits. And I was like, oh yeah, the fucking permits. And so that's when I realized, like, oh, this is, it's done for. And so I asked to go to the bathroom, and I didn't actually have to go pee. What I was doing was and this was the level of paranoia that I came into, I was deciding if I could jump out a window and run away. And I got to the bathroom and I looked down and I started planning it out, and it was like two or three flights. And I decided, okay, I'll probably break a leg, maybe two, and I could get to that alley. And then I just got to get to the morning when I have a flight to Afghanistan where there's a war. And so I think in that thought process is when I started to sweat. And it was, to this day, I've never been in that physical, like, I've never taken enough edibles to get to that level of paranoia. But it is, it's intense. I started sweating to a level in which, like, the sweatshirt that I was wearing was soaked, and it was, it didn't stop. And I decided that it's going to be very obvious when I walk out there of how nervous I am. So I had to do that thing that that men are so good at, and that's compartmentalize and just squish your feelings down really good. And so I did that, and I couldn't stop the sweating part. You can't compartmentalize sweating. So I walked out back into the room, and the producer was like, dude, you look. And I was like, yeah, that's because I am, dude. And then this detective walked by that we hadn't seen all day. And I touched my cop friend, and I was like, hey, who's that guy? Because everyone looks nervous when he walked by. And he said, that's weird. He only comes for serious stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. What does he do? And he said, he's an immigration detective. And I was like, okay, this is it. This is... So I started, like, in my own head, saying goodbye to my two brothers and my girlfriend. And I realized that it was actually, it was 7 p.m., which is the time I would call normally from the hotel. I would call home to say, hey, everything's cool. I love Iran. It's all good. And she wasn't getting that call right now. So he started interrogating us one by one, and he took the producer first, and they're gone for about an hour. And when it was my turn, the translator forced himself in again, even though the detective was savvy to what was going on. And the translator brought me into the room with him, and we sat down at a table, circular table, the three of us, in a triangle. You can only sit down in a triangle now that I realize. So we're sitting there, and we're playing this game, basically, where the detective would say something, he would ask the question, and then I have to wait for the translator to translate it, even though I know what he said, and I'm sweating profusely, and then I would have to answer it in English this direction, and then I would just, it was really hard to do at the time in the state that I was in. And finally, he got, 45 minutes in, he got to the question that mattered the most, and that was, where do you live? And he's holding my Iranian passport, and it says that I live in USA. It says it in English, but any jackass can read USA, right? And so he asked the question, and I forgot to wait. And I looked at the translator person, and I said, I need you to save my life right now. I need you to tell me what to say to this guy to save my life. This is really fucking important. And he looked at me like, dude, what are you? You're kind of fucking up the plan. And so... And the detective started to look kind of panicked, and that's when I realized I had screwed up. And so he told me, like, just do the thing that I said to do when you first got to the country, just do the thing. And the thing was to say Canada, because the permits were out of Canada. And I looked at the passport, and I looked at the detective, who's now super suspicious of me, and I thought that if I'm just honest right now, there might be some sort of leniency. I don't know what, like, the spectrum of torture is, but, like, maybe it'll lean me a little more towards, like, tickling as opposed to death. Right. which was dumb in the end. But so I looked at him and I said, New York. And he stood up and he started screaming and cursing in Farsi. You're a spy. You're a spy. He pointed at the translator. He said, you're both getting arrested. You're both getting tortured. This is suspicion of espionage. You're both doing down right. I got up and I started screaming. I don't know to this day what I was screaming in my defense because all of it was true. But I'm screaming at him and the translator gets up. He's screaming. We're all screaming. No one's listening. And then finally, the translator calms the both of us down and he gets us to sit down and he looks dead in the eyes of this immigration officer and he says, New York, Canada. He says, it's a city in Canada, very small. And so the detective looks at me and he's like, New York, Canada? And I was like, there's no fucking way this is. And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, it's right outside Montreal. 45 minutes later, I was in my hotel room and I called my brother, the older one who lives in Iran, and he was like, I told him the story. He's been arrested many times, so he kind of knew the deal. And I was like, what should I do? And he was like, you should hang up and you should call me on your cell phone. And I called him on this burner cell phone I had. And he says, you need to pack up your shit and get to my home right now because that guy's going to go home and or to his office and someone's going to beat the shit out of him and then they're going to come beat the shit out of you. And this is not good. And so I go to his place and then the next morning I fly to Afghanistan. They gave me a day off in Turkey. And I looked at these people, this crew that I had never met before, and I was like, I need to get drunk. And I don't know you guys very well, but I need you to come with me. And we went and got drunk, and then we went to war in Afghanistan, and they taught us how to wear our bulletproof vests and whatnot. And then I kissed the ground when I came back to New York. I lived in New York for 16 years. I mentioned how much I miss it, but I've started a new adventure here in Baltimore, and I just want to say that the people that I've met here have made me very hopeful for this adventure. So thank you guys for listening.